This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiology Extended Learning Series, featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You are about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, we'll have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access on your mobile device, and each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/ACCEL. Up next, William Bowden is joined by Dr. Rasha Alami, Interventional Cardiology Consultant at the Imperial College in London, UK. They cover insights from Orbita, the first controlled trial of PCI in stable coronary artery disease.
Rasha and I today are going to discuss, at the six-month mark, what has been the fallout of the trial and what is the take-home message to practicing cardiologists in terms of how they would view these results in terms of the management of their patients?
Thank you very much for having me here today.
So, Rasha, I think one of the things that people have been asking about is that the study naturally was by design intended to show an incremental increase in exercise performance. We certainly know that going back to the original ACME trial of 212 patients with LAD disease in the early 90s, that there was in fact a significant increment in exercise performance. And to some degree, you use those data to help model the sample size for Orbita. And we've heard endlessly about the study being too small, underpowered, not long enough follow-up, and so forth. So perhaps you can speak to some of those issues, because I think somehow that has masked the true meaning and the importance of what you and Dr. Francis and others showed.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to acknowledge that every trial has limitations. Right. And you'd be a narcissist if you thought that your trial didn't have some limitations. I think that Orbita, just like other trials, in the design of Orbita, we anticipated certain limitations that were actually built into the trial. Mm-hmm. So we knew, for example, that we didn't want the follow-up to be so long that it would prohibit patients being enrolled into the trial, particularly those with high-grade stenoses. Mm-hmm. And we feared that if the follow-up was too long and the blinded period too long, that patients would drop out or cross over potentially. So we chose 6 weeks, for example, as an endpoint that we thought would certainly give us maximum symptomatic benefit from the point of view of angioplasty. Of course, we expect that as soon as we fix that stenosis, the blood supply to the heart is improved and the artery is open. So there's no reason to suppose that it takes time for the symptoms to improve.
Right.
And so 6 weeks was a balance for us of the effect of angioplasty being at its maximal and also being realistic for the first ever blinded trial.
Right.
Some of the other limitations that we've heard of, for example, the fact that it was a single vessel trial, again, that was deliberate as part of this trial design.
Yeah.
We wanted to make sure that we completely revascularized these patients. We didn't end up with problems in terms of lesions that were left unrevascularized in the angioplasty arm.
Right.
And we wanted to be able to use FFR and IFR and the stress echo in a clean fashion to be able to work out the substrates of patients who may or may not benefit more from angioplasty depending on their ischemic burden.
Right.
In terms of the sample size, I think the sample size was chosen to be large enough to detect a 30-second improvement on the treadmill exercise time. We thought that was a clinically relevant potential improvement for our patients. It was far less than what we'd seen in ACME.
Right.
And of course, if we'd powered it for 96 seconds, we'd have needed far less patients.
Right.
At 16.6 seconds, which is actually the point estimate that we saw, you could design a trial that would detect that effect if you thought that was clinically relevant, and we can debate that. And you'd probably need over 800 patients for that trial.
Right.
But in the end, the sample size calculation is based on what we think is important to patients.
Right.
The size of the trial is based on the size of the effect that we think is clinically relevant. And that's why at 200 patients, I think the trial was relatively well powered. Of course, the standard deviation that we saw was a bit larger than we expected. And so in retrospect, and of course, no power calculation is done retrospectively, we could have detected an effect size of about 34 seconds.
One of the narratives that we experienced post Courage now some 10 or 11 years ago is that also the feeling was that our trial was underpowered despite having 2,300 patients for the death MI endpoint. But some of the criticisms were like the medical therapy was too good or the PCI was not state of the art. And it seems to me that some of the same criticisms have emerged in the aftermath of Orbita because your patients, I think, were very well treated. We've heard much of the commentary that it's not real world to intensively up-titrate patients with anti-angiogenic medications to get them symptom-free before you then randomize them. Although I personally think that that was exactly the right strategy, which was to first of all see to what degree you could get patients to improve clinically with what our guidelines tell us to do, which is to administer optimal medical therapy, and then see if you can demonstrate that the relief of a high-grade flow-limiting coronary stenosis in a segment will be associated with an improvement in ischemia or angina. As you said, one should expect that at 6 weeks, you're going to see a benefit there. So why has this been so hard for cardiologists to accept?
I'm an interventional cardiologist. That's one of my conflicts. We like to feel that we fixed a stenosis.
Right.
We see a stenosis, we have a patient with chest pain, and intuitively, it feels like you should open up that artery and they would feel better. Yeah. I learned a lot from the trial. As you know, I did the medical up-titration for these patients, and it was intensive.
Right.
But the reason it was intensive was because we had to get it done within 6 weeks in a clinical trial.
Right.
Of course, over time, in clinical practice, you could take longer.
Right.
There's no need to get these patients on to three anti-angiogenic therapies in 6 weeks in normal clinical practice. Whether the patients could tolerate that medical therapy for the long term and the side effects associated with it, that's kind of out there for another trial, really. But we designed the trial to be guideline directed.
Right.
Of course, I think that the incremental benefit of any therapy, be it a drug or an intervention, on top of multiple other iterations that you've already done, probably attenuates the effect.
Yeah.
Perhaps if you stent patients with no anti-anginals, they may have a greater effect. I don't know. We didn't study that. But I saw patients with some pretty high-grade stenoses tell me that they went back to Zumba class on beta blockers and calcium channel antagonists.
Yeah.
So it did teach me a lot as an interventionist. We can achieve some benefit for these patients with the medications alone.
Absolutely. One of the things that obviously we learned from Courage and BARI2D, of course, was that there was no death MI reduction. And many in the interventional community said, well, we've already known that for decades. Courage and BARI2D taught us nothing new. But the reason that we continue to do PCI in stable coronary patients is for angina relief. So I think you and your colleagues, I think, really confronted that very important question, which is also a part of our guidelines, whether it's ESC or ACC guidelines. And so I think this is why it has been so difficult, because I think we've all been imbued with the belief for 40 years that fixing the stenosis has a powerful effect. And I think perhaps what you're seeing with Orbita is a contributing potentially powerful placebo effect. Because when you say to a patient, I fixed this lesion, that has an impact on their thinking.
Absolutely. I mean, I thought this trial was going to be a slam dunk. We designed this trial thinking, of course, there's going to be an incremental benefit, symptomatic benefit, and exercise capacity benefit for these patients, especially those proximal LAD lesions that we recruited. And we saw significant ischemia reduction on the stress echo and on the IFR and FFR.
Exactly.
Why that didn't translate as much as we might have expected to the other endpoints in terms of symptom relief and exercise capacity, I think you point at exactly the right point.
Right.
If you tell a patient, and we do this in clinical life, you know, luckily clinical practice is not blinded. If you tell them you fixed their stenosis, they start perhaps to ignore chest pain that they otherwise might report as angina. They probably rehabilitate themselves in terms of getting back on the treadmill. And that placebo component is part of what we do as doctors and probably what makes us good doctors. And in fact, to take that away from the efficacy of a therapy, I think is unfair. Because in fact, it contributes to the clinical effect that we see.
Absolutely. So quickly, before we conclude, I wanted to just ask you whether you and your colleagues are contemplating any future studies. Will there be an Orbita 2, for example? And what are your thoughts about the potential value of doing a sham trial or the ability to do a sham controlled trial in patients with multivessel disease?
Yeah, so no trial is the definitive answer. every trial has kind of just moves us one step forward. And we are actually already planning Orbiter 2. And that will encompass some of those limitations, perhaps, of Orbiter 1, such as including a broader spectrum of patients, those with multivessel disease. Of course, that will also have its complications, because if we incompletely revascularize those patients, you may also suspect that the efficacy of PCI will not be as great as we might expect. But yes, there'll be follow-on. And of course, we're going to be presenting more of the data in terms of the stratification of our patients by their ischemic subsets, depending on their IFR, their FFR, and stress echo, see whether that influences the endpoints at all. So there's more to come.
And Rasha, I think you and your colleagues need to be congratulated for really opening a window into this whole issue of angina and ischemia relief with PCI and stable coronary patients. It's obviously an important contribution to our field, and we wish you and your colleagues continued success with your other investigative endeavors, and hopefully we'll be hearing about Orbiter 2 at some point in the future.
Thank you very much.
This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/accel.